Welcome to Career Tools. This is Sarah.
And I'm Mark.
Today's podcast, How to Answer Questions About Career History, Part 1 of 2.
As always, folks, our content has been crafted by humans and is now certified by the Proudly Human Corporation. The questions this cast answers are, do I have to tell the truth about my career history? How do I structure my answer about my career history? And can I make my career history sound better?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Did you know Career Tools licensees receive full show notes for every episode delivered straight to their inbox? Key takeaways, action items, all of it, all in one place. Visit us online today at manager-tools.com/memberships to find out how a license can work for you. We get questions all of the time from people who feel that their career history is less stellar than they'd like.
Yep, we do, you know? All the time.
They have concerns about what to say when they're asked, why did you leave this job? Or why did you make that decision? Or whatever it may be in their resume that they think isn't casting them in the best light. And some of these people even go so far as not interviewing, staying in their same job or not moving up, not moving on, because they're so concerned about having to be faced with the question and having to answer or explain why they did that thing that was probably a mistake or something they don't like about themselves.
Right. It's self-doubt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'll tell you something. That self-doubt relative to careers is so wasted. It's just so wasted. I mean, I can tell you hundreds of people I've known have been fired or laid off. And all you have to do is handle that question efficiently and frankly, as we'll talk about here. And it's just not a problem. I equate this. Now, the audience will probably laugh at me. And Sarah, you feel free to laugh at me. But there's a parallel in my world. I'm retired now. We're recording this when I'm retired. And so I get to play golf every once in a while. I'm a very serious golfer. I'm a good golfer. And at my club, you'll finish a round of golf. And you'll get to the end of the round where you will stop and maybe see the group that played in front of you. And I probably know them. It's a small club, so they would know me. And they ask me, what did you shoot? Well, now, when you're a golfer, you're in your own head about how you're shooting and how did I do relative to what I normally do? Did I have a good round? Did I have a bad round? Whatever. And so you mistakenly believe in that moment that they actually care. And so you say, oh, 74, but I had two bogeys at the end. So, and before you can finish, they say, nobody cares. And this is my way of reminding people, they don't, if you've had bumps, if you've had issues in your career, it's not the problem you think it is. I got fired from a job. As it turned out, I got fired because my boss didn't want to pay my $250,000 bonus. But almost every CEO I know has been fired from a job. The fear that we have, and the great thing about fear is the word F-E-A-R, false expectations appearing real. It's just not the thing that people think. But then because of their fear, they stumble through the answer thinking, you're going to say no to me, so I'm just going to kind of...
Yeah, and they sound right? Uncertain. Yeah. And yeah, exactly.
And here's the thing. The good news in this cast is this question has a really clear answer. And even though interviewers ask it a lot, it matters less to them than you probably guess. It really matters not that much at all. Okay. Remember, if you're being interviewed, by definition, not if you made it through the first cut, but if you're being interviewed, the belief is that you can do the job. And now they're looking to decide of the people they interview, which one is best for the job. The art of answering questions about your career is to assign it a proper importance in your mind and to decide how you're going to answer, practice it, concentrate on the parts of your interview which demonstrate your competence, and you're going to be fine. And sure, depending on the reasons for that decision or departure, you might get a minus point here, but it is not a death blow the way so many people think. And the rest of the interview can add up so many positive points, they're going to say, yeah, that person didn't do well in that job, and that's happened to virtually everybody. And that minor point becomes essentially irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. Okay, so let's go over our outline for today's cast. We're going to start by discussing something we talked about recently in our podcast on ethics. Tell the truth. The truth is not your enemy. An answer is.
Meaning an answer in Joey air quotes, meaning like I'm going to attempt to shade the truth a little bit. I'm going to be truthfully persuasive rather than actually persuasively truthful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Then we're going to talk about deciding on an answer and practicing that answer. Above all, be honest, short, no blame, with a matter-of-fact delivery, adding in follow-up information, and stop worrying about it.
Because there's nothing you could do about what's already happened, right? There's nothing you can do about the fact that you got laid off or you took 6 months off because your mom was sick. By the way, actually, if I found somebody who took 6 months off because their mom was sick, I'd say, I bet they learned as much that makes them a better person in that 6 months as they did in their previous 6 months in a job. So they think that it has to be a linear march to the top. And folks, I'm sorry, that's just not so.
All right, so tell the truth.
Yeah. Folks, truth is never your enemy in an interview. An answer, again, Joey air quotes, right? An answer that you have shaded the truth, but it sounds real good. Maybe you can get AI to make it sound good and so on. An answer that is crafted and careful, that's actually your enemy. This is where so many people go wrong. We get this question, and by the way, a lot of people get it a lot. It's not just you. They're not interviewing Harvard MBAs and then comparing them to you who's been fired or laid off or took 6 months off or a year off because you had to take care of a sick kid or because your husband or wife was sick or because your parents were sick or you had to move because of a family situation. Everybody asks us, when they ask us these questions, how can I hide this or that? And how can I do it cleverly? Well, one of the things we like to tell people is we don't recommend how to handle something that we don't recommend you do. So these people are like, I want to know how to avoid admitting my weaknesses. They want to be this master communicator who can turn every negative into a positive and answer without answering, as if that ever worked in an interview. Because believe me, interviewers are usually cynical. And if they sniff a gray area that you're attempting to get into, they're going to think, oh, this person's trying to mislead me a little bit for their own benefit. And then why would I hire somebody who I think would mislead me for my own for their own benefit? The interviewees want to deflect the conversation. They want to redirect the interviewer with the right words. They want to talk about something else. But folks, the interviewer's in charge. When you get asked a straight question, you have to give a straight answer.
That's exactly it, folks. Never confuse interviewing with political spin. The truth always wins. And a spin with a good answer is worse than a wrong answer, plainly delivered, clearly delivered in a matter-of-fact way with confidence. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And to your point, Mark, folks want to trick interviewers, and what folks really need to do is stop trying to trick interviewers, because folks, candidates don't succeed. Candidates who are trying to trick interviewers don't succeed. And in that attempted trick, all you end up doing is creating enough doubt in the interviewer's mind that they're not going to hire you. They don't know why they're not going to hire you. But they can feel, they can hear an air of dishonesty or less than truthfulness. And that immediately is a larger black mark on your record than any getting fired.
A termination, anything. Yeah. Well, here's a perfect example from your and my background. When I interviewed you, when you first came to work at Manager Tools, we spent 7.5 hours telling one question, tell me about yourself. And in the early part of your 20s, after you started having regular jobs, you made a series of decisions that would appear to anyone else to look, oh, that doesn't make any sense. Or, hey, I went here because I had a boyfriend, or I did this because of this or whatever. And the reason we hired you was not because your answers in terms of the decisions you made impressed us, but rather because your candor about saying, yep, I did that wrong, I regret it now, or I took this job for this reason. But look, if you're 22 and you haven't been to college yet necessarily, who's to say you're supposed to know what all the rules about careers are? And I remember turning to Danny Martin, who was in the interview with me, like, she's the one. She's absolutely the one. Because she didn't shy away from saying, yep, I messed that up. Yep, I messed this up. Yes, I messed this up. And then I'm thinking, if she ever worked for me, if I asked her what went wrong, she would tell me. I wouldn't ever worry that she was going to cover something up, that she would shade something to make it look good at all. And I'll tell you, over and over and over again, we have hundreds of stories of people who said, yeah, I got fired. Look, folks, I've told this story for many times on Career Tools and Manager Tools. I got fired and I turned out okay. Sarah turned out okay. She's the managing partner of the firm now.
Yeah. The way I'm thinking about it in my brain as you're saying this, Mark, is I would rather someone work for me and make mistakes honestly.
Yes.
Than work for me and not make mistakes dishonestly.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm happy with a mistake as long as you're truthful about it. But if you're not truthful, even if it's perfect, I'm always going to suspect there's something I'm not seeing, something that's being hidden from me, something that I don't know. And that suspicion is worse than a mistake every day.
Another example from today in my life. You know this story, Sarah, because I texted you about it or I called you about it. I was hosting a CEO client for golf out here in Pebble Beach at our club, at Monterey Peninsula Country Club. And the club's communications were very poor, and so I was led to believe that we had a tea time at 8:05 in the morning. Well, I get there to check in for my tea time at about 7:35, and they say, unfortunately, Mr. Horseman, no guests until 10 a.m. Well, there had been a communication about it, but it had been 3 months ago, buried in the fine print of the fourth or fifth paragraph. And I could have gone to my customers, my clients, actually our friends, I mean, Ron Long and Brian Vostrez and Ron's wife, Brooke, and said, I'm sorry, the club screwed up. We have to basically twiddle our thumbs for 2 hours, which none of us have. And so I went to him and said, I screwed up. Because ultimately, I'm the one responsible for making the tea time and for knowing the rules of my own darn club, even if I believe, much to my chagrin and frustration, the club did a terrible job of communicating that because one of our courses is closed, you can't have guests on the tee sheet before 10 a.m. Now, the club did a very nice job about it, but I started my conversation with my clients and said, I screwed up, right? I owned it. And they totally respected it. Said, it happens. It's fine. We'll have breakfast together and then we'll go play golf. And then I just got back 30 minutes ago and here we are recording this cast. Folks, interviewing is about selling your positives, but that doesn't mean you don't have negatives. And your job is not to defend your negatives. Your job is to sell your positives. Look, you know this about yourself. Your interviewers know it too, because they're normal people. But you have this exalted opinion of them that they're only looking for perfect people. The fact is, your mistakes are not a secret. They're a reality. So when you attempt to cover up one of your weaknesses, it's a signal to the interviewer that you have another weakness, which is perhaps worse than whatever you're trying to cover up. And you cover up that weakness, that's going to be perceived as dishonesty. Even if you've been fired for cause, as I have, there is no reason not to say so. In fact, because so many people obfuscate and prevaricate and shade and fade and all kinds of stuff, when someone actually says, well, when they say, why did you leave that job? Well, actually, I was fired for cause. People are so refreshed by it. Interviewers are like, oh, I've got somebody who now there's a stake in the ground. I can trust every other thing he or she ever tells me.
If they're going to say that, they're going to tell me the truth.
Yeah. And let's be clear, folks. You can try to shade or fade or prevaricate or obfuscate or whatever else. Can't believe I got to say the word obfuscate. But folks, one of Horseman's laws, you're not that smart. And they're not that dumb. They don't know what they know, but they know they don't like it. And remember, The purpose of interviewing is to find reasons to say no. And even if all of your answers are technically perfect, but they leave the interview going, I'm sorry, there's just something I don't feel about it.
They're going to vote no.
Yeah. And by the way, most people actually don't achieve slickness in their fake answer. They achieve some version of clumsiness, which they believe covers up the weakness or the lie, but the interviewer smells it, sniffs it out in a minute.
Yeah, exactly. I've got some great news for our Australian listeners. Manager Tools is coming to Melbourne on April 14th and 15th. This is your chance to experience the practical, no-nonsense guidance you've been hearing on this podcast, live and in person. Come ready to learn, engage, and walk away with tools you can put to work immediately. Don't miss out. Visit us at manager-tools.com/register to sign up today. All right. So tell the truth. Now, decide on an answer and practice. And folks, before we get to our recommendations on how to handle this question in an interview, first, we're going to spend a few minutes really talking about the types of circumstances that might be causing today's listeners concern. Now, for example, you might have been laid off in mass layoffs. You might have been the only person in your team or your division who was laid off. You might have been fired, as Mark has talked about in this cast. You might have left your employment by mutual agreement.
Mutual agreement, Joey air quotes, yeah.
You might not have completed your probation period where that applies. You could have fallen out with your boss. You might have made a bad career decision. You might have had a long-term illness or had to leave work to care for a sick relative. You might have had an addiction. You might have had marital, legal, or financial difficulties. You could have been a whistleblower in a previous organization that you worked for. And or you might have just had enough one day and just walked right out. These are the kinds of things that we're talking about in today's cast. These are the kinds of things we know that you're worried about being asked about and know in advance. We're planning for all of those things in this guidance.
Here's what's interesting. I bet you we could give all of those choices in a grading scale and people could choose which ones are worse or which ones are better. And they don't understand that they're completely missing the point. None of those things have to matter. They don't. So people say, well, Mark, it was a layoff, but it wasn't 1,000 people, it was 5. So I think basically I was fired. Well, actually, no, you were laid off. And everyone, because of our own ego, because of our own insecurities, we talk ourselves into, oh, this is a scar. And I'm just sorry, folks, none of these circumstances, no matter how bad they might seem, will prevent you from being employed in the future. They will not. You handling it poorly will, okay? Because remember, if you're in the interview, by definition, the standard for being interviewed from the interviewer's point of view is, I believe this person can do the job and I'm going to compare them to all the other people. But everybody, our own ego and insecurities just get the best of us. Some of these circumstances have happened to the Manager Tools staff. I mentioned Sarah, I mentioned me. Wendy has been in similar situations. And we all think of ourselves as having the best jobs in the world, helping you be more effective in your careers and as a manager and as an executive nowadays. And some of these situations are ones where you may need additional assistance in terms of counseling or medical help, which obviously we're not qualified to give. But provided you are now ready to do what it takes to reenter the workforce, we assure you, you can. There are too many places, there are too much of the system says no. And we get that because the purpose of an interview is to find a reason to say no. But I just want to tell you, if you're listening to this cast, if you're interested in self-development, you have all the skills you need to handle these questions elegantly, professionally, truthfully, and they won't hurt you. They won't.
That's exactly it. That is exactly it. Now, folks, I hate to be the bearer of bad news. We don't want to paint a completely rosy picture here. Now, some of these reasons, some of these causes for your concern, your consternation, these things that you're not feeling really great about being honest about, if you will, may well make finding this new job harder for you.
Yeah.
It might very well be that you have to take on a lower level role and work your way back up. You can really think of that as your career recuperation. Chances are that If you had one of these circumstances, in order for you to get the job you want, you're going to need to be better than everyone else in an interview to overcome those circumstances. But to Mark's point, folks, it can be done. And moreover, if you own your truth.
Yes, thank you. That's a great, own your truth is a great truth.
You just say what it was and not try and hide and not try and deflect those types of things. It will be a lot easier than you actually believe it's going to be.
So we didn't say that the first time we recorded this years ago, but own your truth is a great thing. Okay. Now, in the modern world, this is 2026, we're recording this. I want to be clear about owning your truth, folks. Okay. Owning your truth doesn't mean acting like you got screwed. It doesn't. You're not going to be proud of this, but you're going to state it matter-of-factly and not shy away from the fact that you have a glitch in your background. It's okay. The person who has a glitch in their background, whatever the cause might be, who says, yes, that happened to me, here's what happened, and here's what I did, and so on, and I'm back in the market and I'm excited about things. When you address it forthrightly, people are going to say, this is a person who can fail and pick themselves up and move along. There's a quote that I'm sure everyone knows. It's actually a quote from Vince Lombardi, who was the head coach in the NFL for the Green Bay Packers and won the first two Super Bowls. And I mentioned Vince Lombardi because he learned how to coach football at West Point, where I went to school. And Vince Lombardi once said, the greatest feeling in the world is to lie, exhausted of all your energies, victorious on the battlefield, meaning, in his case, the football field. What people don't quote is the second part. It makes it all about the victory. What he says is the second greatest feeling in the world is to lie exhausted on the battlefield, knowing you have given your all in defeat. The point of it is giving your all. It's not victory or defeat. What is that? I forget. I used to have, I think it's hanging in your office now. There's a poem called If by Rudyard Kipling. And it may not be hanging there, but it's my favorite poem other than a couple of Robert Frost. No, that's Hustle. That's a plaque from a friend of mine about Hustle. That's Charlie Gilb's plaque about Hustle. It's a good one. And If, Rudyard Kipling says, if you can strive for victory and then treat victory or defeat the same and see them as nothing more than imposters, right? In other words, you don't judge yourself by your outcomes. You judge yourself by your efforts and by your ethics, okay? If you are ethical and you give your all and you fail, that's okay. It's actually better to be ethical and to give your all and lose than it is to be unethical and win. Or to even worse, to be unethical and to not try very hard and to win. What's the joy in that? The joy is in striving.
Or Mark, going back to the story about my interview, and the reason that I could own my truth in that moment is because what went through my mind when you asked a question, I'm sure it was about like some dumb 22-year-old boyfriend decision that made me move away from a really good job to a really bad one. The reason in my mind, I was like, you got to own your truth on this one is because I thought to myself, because if you're going to work with these people for the next, let's say 20 years, which was my goal, right? Like I want to work there for a very long time. If I'm going to work there for the next 20 years, they're going to figure out whatever I said wasn't true. If I try and shade the truth, they're going to figure out the right story. They're going to know me well enough that if I've told a non-truth, the truth will come out one day. And I don't want to spend the next 20 years of my life hiding that truth or not giving all of me because what did I say in the interview and what was I not honest about and what do I not want to have come back and bite me later? And can you imagine how stressful the rest of your life is in that organization now that you know you had to tell a lie to get there?
Yeah.
Like, isn't every day just terror?
This brings up the horseman's wager, which talks about the two choices you have in an interview and the two outcomes, getting an offer or not getting an offer versus being truthful about yourself or being not truthful. There are people all the time think, if I can just convince them that I'm the right guy, I can get an offer and then I can have salary and I'll be okay. The problem is, imagine not being yourself and getting an offer. They will have hired somebody that you aren't, and you're not going to do well in the next role. On the other hand, if you're not who they want, if you behave differently, you hold up a cardboard cutout of yourself, and then they don't hire you, wouldn't you spend the rest of your life, if it was a job you really wanted, wondering, how could I have done if I had done the right thing? If I had been myself, maybe they would have offered me. Now, if I'm myself and I don't get an offer, then I'm not right for that job. But if I am myself and I get the offer, admittedly, my smart self, my prepared self, my effective and ethical self, and I get the offer, then that's good alignment. And too often people are thinking, I'll shade, I'll obfuscate, I'll just prevaricate a little bit here. And then the problem comes up later when you discover you're not a fit. So the question then becomes where to start. The first place you start is you decide on an answer. You may get lucky and not be asked why you left your previous employer, but for every single job, you need to be prepared to do so. At least 75% of interviewers, that's an estimate, but they'll ask, and you have got to have an answer.
Mm-hmm. And the reason you've got to have an answer is because the worst answers are the ones that are just given off the cuff. The candidate gives an answer, which is obviously not thought out, as a big hole right on in the middle of it, which then the interviewer hears and feels compelled to ask about.
Dig.
Yeah. And suddenly, what should have been a 1-2 minute max diversion is an entire topic that is being conversed about in the middle of your interview that is not positively affecting your ability to be an employable candidate in the mind of an interviewer. Because now it's a 20-minute segue, and it's a lot of time spent talking about a big mistake because of a bad answer.
If you've got a 45-minute interview, which is not unusual, it's too short, but too many people do it, but okay, fine, you have a 45-minute interview, and you spend 5 minutes having them have to dissect your answer to get to the actual truth, that's more than 10% of the interview, them validating that you actually can be a truthful person. And in that time, in the more than 10% of the interview, you're not talking about how much of a fit you are. So the idea is to have a practice prepared answer that makes the problem go away, even if the practiced or prepared answer in your mind is a bit of a negative. We, as interviewers, Sarah and I interview all the time, Mike interviews, Amanda interviews, and what we want is concise and truthful. And too many people think they can spin a bunch of words. I call it verbal meringue. They spin this thing in front of you and you realize I can poke all kinds of holes in that. And that makes me think, is that what they're going to be like when they work for me? That I have to poke holes in their stuff?
Yeah, when I ask for a straight answer, am I going to get a straight answer or meringue answer?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with saying, I'm sorry, I got fired. It's okay. In fact, a little bit of humor in that situation is acceptable. It's fine. You need to decide in advance what your answer is going to be. Ensure it doesn't have any holes in it. And by the way, if you have a question, write it all out, send it to us, and we'll help you. We'll help you. We will. And then practice it until, and here's the standard, until you can deliver it without thinking. Often when it comes to interviewing, for these kinds of questions, I tell interviewees, you should know this as well as you would know. This is a United States-based answer, so I don't mean to be biased here, but you should know it as well as you know the Pledge of Allegiance. If you're Canadian, you should know it as well as you know the words to O Canada. Okay.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Star Spangled Banner because I can also sing that.
You can. All Canadians can sing the Star Spangled Banner. And unfortunately, sadly, all Americans can't sing O Canada, which is a sad state of affairs between our favorite
working
neighbor and partner.
Over here at
yes, exactly. Exactly. Yes.
Exactly. Okay. So, yes, we want to have a good answer. We want to be able to Mark's point, to be able to say it without even thinking. When they ask, we don't want to have that pause of like, oh, let me think about it. We want to be able to deliver it immediately. And when we make recommendations about practicing, it is not unusual that we're asked, but won't I then sound rehearsed? So if you're one of those people that's worried about that, we're going to give you a basic example. So where did you grow up? We can all answer that question without thinking. And regardless of the answer, we can all, as we're answering it without thinking, in that exact moment, do so in a way that's subtly nuanced, depending on the person asking the question. So an example of myself, for example, if someone from locally where I grew up asked, where are you from?
In Saskatchewan.
In Saskatchewan, in Canada. Mm-hmm. I would say Raymore.
That knows exactly what it means.
Exactly. For a local, everyone knows what that means. But for a non-local, no one knows where that means.
No, it's tiny, folks. Believe me.
Exactly. So if it were someone not exactly local, but well aware of Western Canada, for example, Canada, I would say near Regina.
And they would be like, yeah, because I get that.
They would know where that is. That's a major city. It's the capital city of that province. You would know what it is if you were from that part of the world. But if I'm talking to another person, someone who isn't Canadian, I'm probably going to say Western Canada or Canada even, because I'm trying to distill it to the level that I can answer it while also trying to gauge
their
interest or their knowledge simultaneously. And I can do that immediately. Practicing doesn't make me sound rehearsed. It just allows me to answer without hesitation, without emotion, which is the purpose of this answer, right? And it allows us to make subtle adjustments according to circumstances. Practice doesn't make us sound rehearsed. It makes our answers better, sound better.
It makes every answer better if you're practiced, because you're going to be at a heightened state of tension and excitement. And if you have a practiced answer, I promise you, when you are well-practiced, you're rehearsed, you've done it over and over and over again, you might deliver the words. We're not suggesting you write a speech and memorize the speech, but you practice an answer over and over again. You might deliver it with a few different words, four or five different times. But then when you say it, you know the structure, you know the delivery, you know the tone you want to have. I assure you, the problem is not over-preparation. That is never the problem in interviewing. I have never interviewed someone and say, oh, he's overprepared. But 95% of the people I interview, underprepared dismally. So you can eliminate 95% of the no potential in an interview just by being prepared. So rehearse, rehearse, rehearse.
Yeah, so that you can just answer it up. You can just answer it as if it's breathing air.
Yeah, it's very straightforward. This is what happened.
Singing O Canada.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us, folks. Join us again next week as we continue this topic. Now help us help others and tell your friends. And of course, follow, rate, and review our podcast. And remember, 5 stars only, please.